Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Okay, so we're all started. Welcome to Linux Link Radio. I'm sorry, we've been out on vacation and traveling about. I know Maciej...
Well, I'm not sorry. I've been enjoying my vacation.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, so welcome back, or you should say welcome back, I guess, because it's been us that have been away and not recording podcasts, but we'll try to get better now that we're back and in the office, and it doesn't look like we'll be traveling a whole lot over the rest of the summer. So today we're going to cover a number of interesting topics. It looks like a development of Linux kernel.
You know, I might get sent to Ottawa Linux Symposium. I've been asking for like, I don't know, a while. I mean, part of the big trip, part of the big thing behind that is they have a nice bike ride.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe I shouldn't say, but I mean, there's other valuable parts of the conference, whatever else. But apparently they have a really nice bike ride. I've been meaning to throw my bike on.
Well, you can always bike there from here. That would be a nice bike ride.
Well, it's in theory not that far, right? It's only...
in theory.
It's about 10 hours drive. So let me see. It's like maybe 2 weeks biking.
You see, that's a nice vacation.
If it started last week, I'd be set.
That's it. When does it start?
You know, it's next week. I think it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week.
Well, so maybe we'll have next, or at least material for next recording from that show.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, every time I've gone to Ottawa Linux Symposium, it's great, and the embedded crowd there is huge.
Yeah,
and you try to tell a boss person that does marketing and goes to those slick marketing crappy shows, they just don't even understand that it's a worthwhile thing to send engineering folks to get their head around what's going on. They just
because
they're not selling something and have a fancy booth with. Whatever, they just don't think it's anything important.
I agree with you that show is the show for embedded Linux engineers. And
oh yeah, it's great.
There's a lot of folks that are coming to town to just meet and talk about new development, what areas of Linux kernel should move forward, which ones, what should be the major changes.
Yeah.
And improvements.
Yeah, and the few people that I work with that don't avoid me, I mean, I can run into them. Very, very, I can run into them a couple of times.
You're not that scary.
Because I usually don't see them in person, right? I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, they've moved on. They've hit another part of the country or whatever, and you don't really get to run into them too
There's
often.
A reason why we don't publish our photos and why this is audio-only podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, enough about that. Today we're going to cover a number of topics. We'll talk briefly about what's new in a newly released 2.6.26 kernel.
Yeah, not that long though, because we talked about the kernel. I think it was too long.
Yeah, I agree. So today we're just going to hit a few major points, and then we'll spend some time talking about ways to pinpoint problems in memory.
We're talking about the mPatrol.
Well, as an example.
Yeah, I think we're going to focus on that because I think if you ask me other stuff, I wouldn't be unprepared. I'd sound like stupider than normal.
I'm prepared.
As usual.
You want to tell me that you prepared on mPatrol?
Yes, I did.
Oh, my.
Yes, I did.
Okay. So 2.6.26, it actually has been out for maybe a couple of days. I think it went out on Saturday.
Yeah.
So 5 days old. Mm-hmm. And this release follows the 2.6.25 in a shorter time period than the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a number of new interesting code added to the 2.6.26. The one that's jumping out is, I believe, KGDB.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they improve the other debugger in the kernel. Printk. So,
okay. That's a nice debugger. Well,
let's talk about that minor debugger.
Minor debugger. There's also a number, of course, of device drivers and a lot of improvements around existing device drivers. But let's talk about KGDB first, because that project has been out there for, long years now.
Yeah, well, for a while, Amit Kale, I think was his name, he worked here at TimeSys, and he was the KGDB maintainer. And he started like InfoSys something. It was, and then I think he's now since retired or something. He's getting this.
Well, I in the past, KGDB, that was actually an argument in the open source, right? Whether you really need kernel debugger.
Yeah. Well, I know that. I know one of the...
Other than printk.
Right? Well, yeah, this other bit of debugger. But you know, I know that, the feeling on behalf of that Torvalds guy was, you know, why even have a debugger? I mean, you shouldn't have a debugger because it forces you not, or put it this way, it makes it easier for you not to know what you're debugging. And so you should be intimately familiar with what you're working on so that you don't make mistakes as easily.
Right.
Which is it's a somewhat of a valid argument.
I agree. But there's a group of people that are new to Linux, or let's say have experience with operating systems similar to Linux. But they are not low-level kernel engineers. Kernel low-level engineers.
I don't buy it. I just don't buy that argument. I mean, come on. I mean, like a debugger is a GPS, right? And printk is a map and compass, and you should be able to hack it with a map and compass.
No, I agree. I mean, printk is a very valid debugging tool. It's just that
sometimes the debugging tool.
It's difficult if you have a deployed system to instrument it, because with printk you usually have to instrument ahead of. Debugging session, right? You can, of course, turn the print case on and off to see what's happening inside the running kernel. With
all the more to the point that, you know, print K is a better debugging tool because it forces you to think about your software.
Yeah, but you can't put print case arbitrarily in the software that's already deployed in the field.
Of course you shouldn't, because you should have thought through that ahead of time. Come on.
Well, but that's where I guess KGDB comes in and helps out, because you can always access kernel internals during kernel runtime.
Yeah.
And again, I haven't looked at the latest KGDB patches that got into kernel mainline today. Mm-hmm. As to the level of information that you can obtain through a KGDB, through that new KGDB interface inside a kernel. Mm-hmm. Well, so in the next project, I want to see you actually try to debug a kernel that crashes.
If you wrote it right, it doesn't crash.
Yeah.
Well, come.
Have you ever written anything that was perfect?
Yeah. I think we got to move on to the next thing. What are we supposed to be talking about?
Well, KGDB, right?
Yeah.
So how does KGDB work? KGDB has, it's part of a Linux kernel, right? It's a code that exposes the GDB interface to a host machine, and you need to have a GDB, a GDB itself running on a host machine, and that GDB has to be set so that it understands whatever architecture you are debugging. So if you're target platform is ARM platform, and you have an ARM kernel instrumented with KGDB. On a host machine, you need to have a cross debugger that understands ARM architecture and can translate the communication from KGDB from a target platform into a set of information that can be displayed with various tools on your host machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you want to?
I totally agree, Maciej. I think you have it completely right.
Let's then contrast it to your favorite tool, printk.
Yeah. So you don't have to do any of that.
Well, that's true.
See, you don't have to do it right away.
Well, so...
One of the enhancements... I know we don't want to talk all the time about that.
What's the enhancement?
You know what they did is they fixed up the percent %p. So if you're printing out a pointer, right, you can put an arbitrary pointer type after that. Uh-huh. And then you can hook that, the pointer type, and then, you know, if you have like an inode and you want to print out formatted data about an inode, then you can, you know, you can do that. It's extensible, so you can set that up for other data structure types.
So what you're saying is that now you can correctly output numbers and various values on a screen?
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was broken.
I didn't say it was broken. I didn't say it was broken. Jeez, oh man, it's an enhancement. Makes your life a lot easier.
Well, it's been a while since we recorded our podcast.
That's what you do for you know, that's what people say. It's like they need KGDB to look at the symbols and everything, and it's difficult to deal with the data structures.
Yeah.
There you go. Don't have to anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's maybe jump to our other topic.
Yeah, we want to talk about MPatrol.
Yeah, we want to talk about memory tracing.
Yeah. So I know that I did a presentation on MPatrol.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, no one knew it, I think. But no, but seriously, this is an application land. And so what MPatrol does is it's one of those class of things that overrides new, right? New and free, and all of its nieces, nephews, cousins, aunts, and uncles, right? For allocating and releasing memory.
Mm-hmm.
So how it works is you compile against a library, and it maintains a side list. So it maintains a hash. So every pointer that comes in that you request, it says, okay.
Yeah.
Pointer requested this much memory at this time. And then when the program ends, mm-hmm. it then reconciles that list and it'll go back to all of the news mm-hmm. that were not freed.
Mm-hmm. Is there an overhead?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean,
but execution overhead or footprint overhead?
Yes. Yeah. All the overheads for this one. It's got some interesting things. Like what it'll do is, let me actually talk in the microphone about that. So one of the things it'll do is it'll figure out whether you've overwritten or underwritten memory.
Okay.
And it has two different approaches. So one approach is it'll put some characters on either side of your allocation.
Okay.
And then whenever you do something with one of your, whenever you free your allocation or at the end of the run, it'll inspect those bytes at the beginning and the end and then decide whether it's not that pattern, right? So it's a certain pattern. If it's not that pattern, then it'll bark at you and say, hey, you overwrote.
Okay.
Or the other thing you can do is you can force your allocation to be at the beginning or end of a page.
Yeah.
So if you're doing an underwrite, it'll take one page, put your allocation on that page, and you can position it to be at the beginning or the end. So if you're doing an underwrite, you put it at the beginning of the page. Yeah. And when you do your underwrite, it'll generate a page fault.
Right. So the idea behind MPatrol is to help developers find memory leaks in their applications.
Yeah, memory leaks and other, and I guess anomalies handling, anomalies working with the heap.
Right. So let's talk actually about the first one and then about the second one. So memory leaks. By counting or instrumenting allocations and deallocations, you can track patterns and you can find out which ones do not match,
mm-hmm.
Which would result in a red light, right? This is, hey, you omitted this particular allocation. Mm-hmm. You have not freed up that memory. The second one, a heap. What's so special about using MPatrol to track heap allocations?
So what you can do is you can manage the memory such that you can keep track of times when you've written past your pointer.
Yeah.
Or written past the amount of the space that you've allocated. So let's say one of the classic examples, right, is you have a data structure that has a string in it.
Yep.
And you don't respect the boundaries of the string, right? And you write past and write over your data structure and then write off into memory somewhere.
Yeah, it happened to me once or twice.
Yeah. Never for me, by the way.
Perfect apps.
Yeah. So if you've ever done anything stupid like that.
Uh-huh.
Which I have all the time, right? So if you can position your allocations such that those overwrites or underwrites will generate an immediate page fault.
Yeah.
Or if you're off by a small amount, make quotes from a small amount, you can have it set up so that after the program runs or when a free runs, it'll inspect the memory before and after the space has been free.
So what are the side effects of generating a page fault? Can you control how the MPatrol flags those different issues to you, meaning whether it halts the program or just raises a flag or spits out the seg fault?
Yeah, so it spits out the seg fault. It shows you the call stack
mm-hmm.
and gives you some idea about the allocation that you ran over.
Yep.
So it'll tell you back where that memory was allocated, and that's about it. But that's really handy. I mean, it's not handy put it this way. So if you have the great big loop,
yep.
You know, one to a billion, and you're allocating memory in that loop, and one of those is eventually overwritten,
mm-hmm.
well, that's not as useful because you don't know which one. Yeah, was allocated. But you still have some idea of the origin. I mean,
that's right.
One of the things it can't tell you it can only show you the allocation which wasn't freed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, obviously it can't tell you where something wasn't freed. Right?
Okay, run it through me again, man.
Well, this is what I was talking to some poor, you know, marketing guy about what MPatrol did, right? And so it'll tell you, it'll point to the place where the memory was allocated that wasn't freed.
Yeah.
But it obviously can't point out where you didn't free memory.
Okay. So what you're saying right? is that during the runtime, it will tell you during runtime on which page it wasn't freed, but won't point in a code where the matching allocation is.
Oh, it'll point to the matching out. It'll point to the where it was allocated.
Okay.
But obviously, it won't point to where you didn't free it because
yeah,
you didn't do
you
it.
You didn't free it.
But you know, imagine explaining this story to marketing guy. Right? 3 second. It's like, well, it won't tell me where my problem is. Of course, dude. It can't. Right?
It actually will, right? It will show you where the allocation is.
Yeah, so that
it will stop you and will tell you, hey, think twice, because otherwise you're going to run out of memory.
Yeah, so it'll point back to the allocation, right? Yeah. But, you know, explain this to the marketing guy.
So
it didn't, like, the light didn't go on for him.
What are the user interfaces, or how does MPatrol communicate with end user?
So it just dumps out a log file at the end of a run. So you link against MPatrol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty cool. I know when I was using it, I just set my, there's a header file. So I did dash include MPatrol H, and then I linked against something. And so I didn't have to touch my code at all.
Yeah.
And that, I always like systems like that because if it involves like multiple builds or something, you know, we have to touch the source code. It's an invitation for like a screw up.
Yeah, I sniffed through a couple of MPatrol files. And I know that there are other tools, commercial tools as well, that help read MPatrol data and navigate to a specific line in your application where you did your allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually saves a lot of time because if you MPatrol a large system with lots of applications, it's difficult to go through that very lengthy log file and try to find a line of code where the matching allocation happened.
Oh yeah.
So you track a single application, but you can also track the entire system if you build it with MPatrol libraries.
Yes. Yeah. And I didn't, you know, in my, you know, tour of using the tool, I haven't tried, but I know it has a link loader too. So you can run it, and I've never used this feature. I've always just recompiled.
Yeah,
but you can also run this program. So run your program as a parameter against MPatrol, and MPatrol will get in there and somehow inspect the symbol table and do the right thing so that it will call its libraries instead of. So you don't have to compile with the MPatrol library if you don't want. But I never use that. So
which is great. I mean, in reality, nobody actually builds the entire system with optimized for MPatrol, right? Because of the overhead, because of if you count on predictability of your system, you instrument it with MPatrol, the timings change.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's a killer memory wise. So if you set it up with the allocations bordering a page, it allocates a page per allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're one byte, and then it allocates a page before and after, so that you'll get the appropriate page faults. So you allocate 10 bytes and you've taken up 3 pages worth of data.
So that's why, especially in embedded systems, where you have fairly limited amount of memory and you don't want to kill your system by paging all the time
in
memory, you don't instrument the entire system. You just instrument your application and you count on open source projects to do similar things for each of the packages or applications on their own.
What I've seen as a common usage for, and what I've done myself is to just run MPatrol natively. Right?
Mm.
So you can run set up your code and put it inside of a little scaffolding, you can compile with MPatrol, run it on your local computer, simulate the inputs and outputs that you have. So all your routines get called, and then you can then see your leaks that way. So it's not as though you have to run it on your target to get the same sort of results.
That's true, because you can always cross-compile or compile your application on a host machine. And if you have missed some of the deallocations, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's not perfect. It's certainly not a perfect setup, but hey, it's a lot better than, because you put that on your 16 meg board, and before you know it, it's one meg for every 2K download, or for, or not 2K down, but for your heap increases, your heap requirements increase.
That's actually an excellent excellent point, Gene. I've never actually thought of that. I've always considered MPetrol as a tool that I would want to use on a target platform, but it's an excellent point that given its requirements and how memory hungry it is, running it on a host machine with an application that can compile for the host machine is a great alternative.
Yeah, I mean, that's the approach I take is I try to do as much on my dev host as I can, because I have SCADs and SCADs of memory, and processing time isn't a big deal, and the effort involved in getting your host, getting the target all set up, is probably the same amount of effort involved in getting a scaffolding set up. At least that's what I keep telling myself, right?
So now I understand your claim that your programs on target platforms don't need any debugging or memory tracing.
Well,
you do everything on the host.
Yeah.
Well, that's one way.
Yeah. You have to tell the right. Don't tell anybody.
Well, maybe it's going to be useful to someone.
Yeah. So it's a pretty cool setup. The other thing that's really nifty about MPetrol is the API that they have.
Okay.
So it takes. The documentation isn't so great, and it takes a little bit to get your head around. But you can. There's the notion of a prologue and an epilogue. So whenever you do an allocation, it'll make a call into a routine, and you can see what pointer is being allocated, how much, if it's a realloc, at the call stack at the time the allocation was made. So if you're trying to ferret out something that's difficult, you can at least if you have it narrowed down to somewhere in the stack, you can at the time that each memory allocation is made, you can walk the stack and see whether it's something that you that's suspect
function. Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Can you glue your own code to those?
What do you mean glue your own code?
So if I want to call another routine that would do something else,
dude. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So yeah, you set that up by setting a pointer. So it's pretty interesting. So you send it in a pointer to a function, and then you're responsible actually for the daisy chaining. So you cache. So you set the pointer to the function. So the prologue thing, the pre-allocation. Yeah. So you say set the pre-allocation to this function pointer. You hand a function pointer, and then it hands you back the function pointer to the prior setting. And then in your routine, you're responsible to call the prior prologue, and that chains downward.
Well, so that actually means that you can write your own code that's going to track allocations and the allocations dynamically for you. And if you have your own interface with which you want to capture that data, perhaps you want to send that over the network, you can absolutely do that. But each instrumentation adds additional overhead. So in most cases, people don't do that.
Yeah.
But if your system is fast and you have some cycles that you can... Yeah. You want to leverage?
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing too is in the API, they also build in the notion of a printf to the MPetrol log. Mm-hmm. So MPetrol, when it runs, is always has this log streaming.
Yeah.
And if you want to print out data to that log, you can do that. There's API functions for that as well.
Yeah.
So that way you can have a uniform. It's not like you have to always write the standard out or standard error or something like that. Instead, you can point your output. Or you can just say print this to the MPetrol output file, and wherever that file happens to be, the output will go there, and that's really cool.
Well, because I've actually worked during my professional life with many applications that were fairly complex that had very many execution paths, and it's quite difficult to find or execute most of them in a short period of time. So what you do is you let it run and you execute variety of different functions, hoping that all the paths are going to get executed.
Well, the other cool thing you can do too is you can set, so inside your prologue function, so let's say you have a something, let's say you have a bunch of conditions you're searching for, so you walk the path, you look for different, and then you can set a breakpoint, right? So you have you've satisfied all these conditions, right at the line, you can wrap that in an if, and then right at the line where you're going to return from that function, or you just have some line that's breakable, you can stick a breakpoint there and then begin walking back and see the state of the system. Right. That's really cool.
It is, because then you can actually have access to your heap. You have access to a snapshot of your registers.
Yeah.
And it's a connection to your print K, right?
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
So use print K's to, with what was it, percent D? Or?
Well, no, this is in userland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you couldn't do that in
right. It was kernel
in kernel land. So well, unfortunately, but then the other thing you have too is it has this notion of iterating all over the set of allocations.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool too. Because one of the questions, you know, some folks has is, you know, how much memory have I allocated off the heap?
Yeah,
and that's harder to get than you think. It really is difficult to get an accurate count.
Okay,
and so. Yeah, at a minimum, you can walk through every pointer that's been allocated, get the allocated size, get the page align size, get the call stack at the time it was allocated. So you can really do some really cool things to inspect the state of your system with respect to the heap.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fun. I do really like the notions of the prologues and the epilogues, because you really can get in there and set your own special breakpoint.
Yeah, there are a couple of languages that programming languages that actually had that notion as well. I think Ada was one of them that had a similar concept,
mm-hmm.
Programming wise, when you were writing some functions.
Yeah, Ada is the system where, you know, once you've managed to get a decompile. So there's no debugging step in that, because by the time you manage to get it to compile, it will formally work.
Well, no, but
you almost have no choice.
My point was that this prologue and epilogue, depending on a program or the purpose of the program, is very useful and usually allows extensibility. So you can connect your own routines, or the prologue and epilogue are designed for that purpose only, mm-hmm. to allow you to write your own code that executes before and after certain chunk of code.
So sure.
That's very handy, and I know doesn't make sense for every single application.
Yeah, and the other thing too is being able to arbitrarily walk all the allocated pointers and then figure out where exactly they were allocated. And that's extremely powerful. And you could even, you know, you could even hook that up to a signal too.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, and at different times hit the signal and then have it collect that data and do a little analysis for you. That's well, cool stuff.
That's how all those tracing tools work these days. Mm-hmm. And it's not only the memory tracing tool, but execution tracing tools as well.
Yeah.
System-wide tracing tools, LTTNG.
Yeah. So I think we're all done. And we're getting this stop doing this sign. So again, I apologize for not recording a little bit. Said we were... I wouldn't call it summer break, more like summer sloth or something. We just didn't get to it with all the... Of course, Machi's been on vacation nonstop, so...
Well, yeah, it's my fault as usual, but yeah. that's okay. We'll talk after you come back from the show.
Oh, I don't think they're going to... I think they're going to make me walk there or something if I want to get sick. Oh, gee, I don't know.
They'll pay for your water as you bicycle there.
Yeah, yeah, that's $7 travel expenses. I don't know about that. The accounting guys. So... hey, if you have any questions or comments, drop us a line at podcast@timesys.com. We've gotten a couple mails the time we were recording saying, hey, where's the next one? So again, sorry. And if you leave us your name and address, we'll even send you a shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so we'll
not like a U-shirt or something, but a podcast shirt.
We'll send you a shirt, but we're interested in your ideas or what you would like to hear about. So write to us, let us know, and we'll do our best to cover all those topics.
Yeah, love to hear. It's podcast@timesys.com. And I think the podcasts are at Linux Link Radio. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure how, because we have several different channels. Some people listen to us on iTunes, and some people have, what's that, feet? I don't know what they create, the thing kids are using these days to get their podcasts.
Oh, Dad, come on.
But you can always visit us at linuxlinkradio@timesys.com as well. And I'd just love to hear from you. Send us, drop us a line, tell us, you know, like Maciej said, just tell us what you want to hear about. We'd love to do an episode if it's something that interests you.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Yeah. So stay tuned.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.